Chapter 6. The furniture that went mad. Now it happened that in the early hours of Whit Monday, before Millie was hunted out for the day, Mr. Hall and Mrs. Hall both rose and went noiselessly down into the cellar. Their business there was of a private nature, and had something to do with the specific gravity of their beer. They had hardly entered the cellar when Mrs. Hall found that he had forgotten to bring down a bottle of sarsaparilla from their joint room. As she was the expert and principal operator in this affair, Hall very properly went upstairs for it. On the landing he was surprised to see that the stranger's door was ajar. He went on into his own room and found the bottle as he had been directed. But returning with the bottle, he noticed that the bolts of the front door had been shot back, that the door was in fact simply on the latch. And with a flash of inspiration he connected this with the stranger's room upstairs, and the suggestions of Mr. Teddy Henry. He distinctly remembered holding the candle while Mrs. Hall shot these bolts overnight. At the sight he stopped, gaping, then with the bottle still in his hand went upstairs again. He rapped at the stranger's door. There was no answer. He rapped again, then pushed the door wide open and entered. It was as he expected. The bed, the room also, was empty. And what was stranger, even to his heavy intelligence, on the bedroom chair, and along the rail of the bed, were scattered the garments, the only garments so far as he knew, and the bandages of their guest. His big slouch hat even was cocked jauntily over the bedpost. As Hall stood there he heard his wife's voice coming out of the depth of the cellar, with that rapid telescoping of the syllables, and interrogative cocking up of the final words to a high note, by which the West Sussex villager is wont to indicate a brisk impatience. G. George. You got what I want? At that he turned and hurried down to her. J. Janny, he said, over the rail of the cellar steps, "Tas the truth what Henry says. He's not in us room, he ain't." And the front door's unbolted. At first Mrs. Hall did not understand, and as soon as she did she resolved to see the empty room for herself. Hall, still holding the bottle, went first. "Aye, if he ain't there," he said, "his clothes are. And what's he doing without his clothes, then? Tas a most curious business." As they came up the cellar steps they both, it was afterwards ascertained, fancied they heard the front door open and shut, but seeing it closed and nothing there, neither said a word to the other about it at the time. Mrs. Hall passed her husband in the passage, and ran on first upstairs. Someone sneezed on the staircase. Hall, following six steps behind, thought that he heard her sneeze. She, going on first, was under the impression that Hall was sneezing. She flung open the door and stood regarding the room. "Oh, of all the curious," she said. She heard a sniff close behind her head as it seemed, and turning, was surprised to see Hall a dozen feet off on the topmost stair. But in another moment he was beside her. She bent forward, and put her hand on the pillow, and then under the clothes. "Cold," she said. "He's been up this hour or more." As she did so, a most extraordinary thing happened. The bedclothes gathered themselves together, leapt up suddenly into a sort of peak, and then jumped headlong over the bottom rail. It was exactly as if a hand had clutched them in the center, and flung them aside. Immediately after, the stranger's hat hopped off the bedpost, described a whirling flight in the air through the better part of a circle, and then dashed straight at Mrs. Hall's face. Then as swiftly came the sponge from the washstand, and then the chair, flinging the stranger's coat and trousers carelessly aside, and laughing dryly in a voice singularly like the stranger's, turned itself up with its four legs at Mrs. Hall, seemed to take aim at her for a moment, and charged at her. She screamed and turned, and then the chair legs came gently but firmly against her back, and impelled her, and Hall out of the room. The door slammed violently and was locked. The chair and bed seemed to be executing a dance of triumph for a moment, and then abruptly everything was still. Mrs. Hall was left almost in a fainting condition in Mr. Hall's arms on the landing. It was with the greatest difficulty that Mr. Hall and Millie, who had been roused by her scream of alarm, succeeded in getting her downstairs and applying the restoratives customary in such cases. "Ta's spirits," said Mrs. Hall. I know Ta's spirits. I've read in papers of N. tables and chairs leaping and dancing. Take a drop more, Janny," said Hall. "Apostrophe 'twill steady ye." "Lock him out," said Mrs. Hall. "Dee don't let him come in again. I half guessed I might ha' known. With them goggling eyes and bandaged head, and never going to church of a Sunday. And all they bottles more'n it's right for anyone to have. He's put the spirits into the furniture, my good old furniture. 'Twas in that very chair my poor dear mother used to sit when I was a little girl. To think it should rise up against me now. Just a drop more, Janny," said Hall. "Why, your nerves is all upset. They sent Millie across the street through the golden 5 o'clock sunshine to rouse up Mr. Sandy Rogers, the blacksmith. Mr. Hall's compliments and the furniture upstairs was behaving most extraordinary. Would Mr. Rogers come round? He was a knowing man, was Mr. Rogers, and very resourceful. He took quite a grave view of the case. Armed, if that ain't witchcraft, was the view of Mr. Sandy Rogers. Why, you warrant horseshoes for such gentry as he. He came round greatly concerned. They wanted him to lead the way upstairs to the room, but he didn't seem to be in any hurry. He preferred to talk in the passage. Over the way Huckster's apprentice came out, and began taking down the shutters of the tobacco window. He was called over to join the discussion. Mr. Huckster naturally followed over in the course of a few minutes. The Anglo-Saxon genius for parliamentary government asserted itself. There was a great deal of talk, and no decisive action. Let's have the facts first, insisted Mr. Sandy Rogers. Let's be sure we'd be acting perfectly right in Buston, that there door open. A door on bust is always open to Buston, but he can't on bust a door once you've busted in. And suddenly and most wonderfully the door of the room upstairs opened of its own accord, and as they looked up in amazement, they saw descending the stairs the muffled figure of the stranger staring more blackly and blankly than ever with those unreasonably large blue glass eyes of his. He came down stiffly and slowly, staring all the time. He walked across the passage staring, then stopped. "Look there," he said, and their eyes followed the direction of his gloved finger, and saw a bottle of sarsaparilla hard by the cellar door. Then he entered the parlor, and suddenly, swiftly, viciously, slammed the door in their faces. Not a word was spoken until the last echoes of the slam had died away. They stared at one another. "Well, if that don't lick everything," said Mr. Rogers, and left the alternative unsaid. "I'd go in and ask about it," said Rogers, to Mr. Hall. I'd demand an explanation." It took some time to bring the landlady's husband up to that pitch. At last he rapped, opened the door, and got as far as, "Excuse me, go to the devil," said the stranger in a tremendous voice, "and shut that door after you." So that brief interview terminated. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.